Hey there, and welcome back to Take One, the podcast that brings you just one essential page of Talmud each day. And I want to begin our discussion of today's page, Bava Metzia 50, with a section that may sound completely kind of dreary and dull, but I promise you it contains, as is usually the case, multitudes. Have a listen. A dilemma was raised before the sages. According to the opinion of the rabbis, that one has only until a period of time has passed that would allow him to show the merchandise to a merchant or to his relative in order to claim that he has been exploited in a case where the disparity between the value of the purchase item and the price paid is less than 1/6, is there a waiver of the discrepancy and therefore the transaction is finalized immediately, or, in this case as well, is the transaction finalized only after the time that it takes the buyer to show the merchandise to a merchant or to his relative? The discussion here may sound overly legalistic, but it's kind of fascinating. A marketplace, the rabbis are telling us, is predicated on trust. It's predicated on the idea that when someone says to you, well, this is the price that you have to pay for a certain object, you may pay this price, and then you may look at the object and say, I don't know, man, seems to me like I was ripped off, and therefore, there should be a period of time in which you could go and consult with the merchant or with one of your relatives to say, hey, man, is this fair? All of this is an indication of why we need to have good faith and some kind of procedure to address one another. And friends, the marketplace is not very different from that other marketplace, the marketplace of ideas. And so I want to welcome back to the show, producer Josh Cross. Hello.
Hey, Liel.
Josh Cross, you're a man constantly engaged in the marketplace of ideas. You have stepped up to, dare I say, a leadership role in an educational organization here in New York City. Tell us what it is that you do.
I am currently one of the members of CEC3, which, for those of you blessed not to have to deal with the public school system in New York City, the largest public school system in the world, is essentially the school board for the Upper West Side, mid-60s up to 125th Street, depending on which avenues you're at.
And so the conversations that you have are very important conversations. These are the conversations that, in large part, will determine the future of your children's education and the education of so many other children in New York City. And so you would expect that the marketplace of ideas, as you discuss and debate these important topics, would be very much in line with what the rabbis are advocating today, a marketplace of ideas in which you could have some time and some process to go ahead, debate, ask yourself if something that was said was fair, treat each other in a way that suggested mutual trust and respect. Is this the case?
It's 2024. The answer is obviously no. We are a deliberative body with not a lot of power. There's not actually that much. Most of what we do is send resolutions to ask the DOE to do this or the chancellor to do that or make suggestions. You know, from an idealistic standpoint, you would think that everybody who winds up on this has the best of motivations and is always intellectually honest and wants to work with their partners even though they disagree with them.
And yet, in complete and stark contrast to the example or the path that the rabbi set, you shared with me recently a story that occurred that I found deeply disturbing. Kindly tell it to us.
Well, in a nutshell, we were having a debate on a resolution that would condemn a particular group. Let's just put it that way. We don't need to get into that. And this is a board. When October 7th happened, we immediately at the next meeting put out a resolution in support of the Israeli people, something that I argued vociferously for and made sure it got passed. The person who brought that resolution, the October 7th one, has also brought several other socially interested resolutions. We were having a debate about whether or not our community group, our school board, could say, hey, we don't like this organization or we don't like that organization.
An organization that you believe has a deleterious, nefarious effect on education in the city.
I mean, personally, yes, but that aside, the question was whether or not we could even condemn an organization. We had clearly condemned Hamas. We had condemned other things over time. And so in the meeting, you can actually find video on this online. I will not share a link. I said to the person, hey, can you condemn anti-Semitism? Yes. Can you condemn racism? Yes. Can you condemn sexism? And I went through a whole thing. And then when they got to the one topic, this happens to be trans issues, the person was like, well, and they didn't like that I had challenged them.
Right. And the point, just to be clear, the point that you were trying to make, look, we can condemn whatever we want. We are entitled to our opinions. We're a deliberative body. We can sit here and say, we think group A or group B or group C are behaving in a way that's irresponsible and not in line with our values. In fact, we did this with Hamas. We could do it with all kinds of groups, center, right, and left, more or less.
Yes, that we had the right to it. Whether we chose to vote for such a resolution, that's a whole nother story.
How did this perfectly reasonable exclamation of ideas that really everything is debatable and up for discussion, how did that go?
The free speech advocate who was very upset and felt attacked because we suggested we could condemn this group went to somebody who I believe was their friend and had basically an article written in a magazine that's so right-wing it would make Fox blush, condemning me, condemning another person, and calling us unhinged anti-Semites, effectively. Things were taken so out of context. And the thing is this person is either stupid or intellectually dishonest, and I don't think they're stupid.
Now, the rabbis today suggest this period of time in which you could go back to the merchant and say, hey, I don't think I got a fair deal. Did that person take advantage of that advice? Did they go back to you and be like, just so I'm clear, you're not saying X, Y, or Z. She just went straight to the drug dealer. She just took it straight to the press.
First, she went to a private chat group with a bunch of folks in it. She didn't realize my wife was in it, and so I've seen those chats. And then she went to a journalist who she's friends with who published an article basically saying all sorts of stuff and not checking in with us. So rather than dealing straight, if you will, she went and weaponized the conversation in a way that's not effective for anybody. And in fact, if you look at the article, they use this conversation to denigrate the entire CEC system that this person was part of.
Now, Josh, I wanted to have this conversation in large part because I really can't imagine something more antithetical to sort of Talmudic values writ large. If you learn anything from reading the Talmud, I think it's really this idea of machloket l'shem shamayim, right? An argument for the sake of heaven. The idea that we're here to discuss these questions, which matter a lot. I mean, bear in mind, the rabbis are not just talking about these issues because, you know, they have nothing better to do on a Wednesday afternoon. They're talking about them because they believe it's the living word of God. So getting something right or wrong, it matters a lot. And yet they're putting forth a path for us that says, listen, you're allowed, in fact, you're encouraged to have strong disagreements and think that the other person is so wrong that they're offending the creator of heaven and earth. However, the thing that you do is you remain in the conversation. The thing that you do is you offer arguments. The thing that you do is you engage the other person. The thing that you do is realize that you all occupy the same proverbial marketplace of ideas and you don't exit it at the first sign of trouble and, you know, look for someone on the outside to denigrate the person that you were talking to just to shut him up.
I think the lesson that we get from the Talmud in general is that, like you said, we are open to debate. We can disagree vehemently and then throw back a drink afterwards. We can be friends with people that 100% disagree with as long as we show them respect. And I think that's the great lesson in this, in being a square dealer in negotiations or discussion. I think it goes against our entire tradition. You know, we're on the cusp of what will probably be one of the most contentious elections in interpersonally that we've ever had.
We say this every time.
But we really mean it this time, guys. And I think when the stories of the downfall of America, if it comes to pass, God forbid, happen, it's going to be because we treated the people that we disagreed with like crap rather than following the lessons of the Talmud, which is to go, we disagree, we can work through these things, we are intellectually rigorous and honest with each other, and can have these discussions and then celebrate our togetherness. That's not what's happening here, and I think the Talmud would warn us against all of this.
Josh Cross, I wish your school board, America, and the Jewish people the courage and the wisdom to heed that great advice. Thank you so much for being our guest.
Thank you.
This has been Take One. If you enjoy the show, and I hope that you do, then you are really going to love the new book just published by me. It's called How the Talmud Can Change Your Life, Surprisingly Modern Advice from a Very Old Book. You can order it now at your local bookstore or directly from the publisher through the link in this here podcast description or through that big online store whose logo is, you know, a smile. As always, please go rate and review Take One on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. You could get your Take One t-shirts and mugs and other swag at tabletstudios.com, and you could subscribe to our weekly newsletter at tabletm.ag/Take One Newsletter. Take One is a Tablet Studios production. The show is hosted by me, Leah Leibowitz, and is produced and edited by Josh Cross, Robert Scaramucci, Quinn Waller, and Ellie Blyer. Our team also includes Stephanie Butting, Courtney Hazlett, and Tanya Singer. For more information, go to tabletmag.com/takeone or email us at takeone@tabletmag.com. I hope we have made your day a little more Talmudic.